This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Bombshell tonight in the case of a so-called loving mom, Lindsay Clancy, who now reveals a male voice ordered her to kill her three tots. This as video and photos emerge of her ex canoodling with his new wife while heartbreaking testimony unfolds in court. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Three little tots, one an infant, all found strangled dead by mommy.
And my closing argument would be, she did this because. And the jury's going to fill that answer, that blank in with, she was crazy, she was psychotic, she was mentally insane.
4747 Summers Street was filed with the police. The old party jumped off the top floor of the house, twice her wrist as well, and neck injuries, neck laceration. She's conscious at this time. We're going to check with med flight. It was over a 20-foot fall.
It's unknown where the knife is, or whatever she used to slit her. She's in the, looks like they're pinging around the back. We'll get that info now.
She did use a knife at first, unknown where that is at this time.
I'm on the way. We're with the county.
I got two hands for rest of the baby.
The chilling 911 audio played in front of a jury. Now we understand that loving mom, so-called loving mom, Lindsay Clancy, states that a male voice ordered her to kill. Why always a male voice? That said, in the last hours, video and still photos emerge of her ex-husband canoodling with his new wife as the heartbreaking testimony unfolds in a court of law. This is from our friend Harvey Levin at TMZ. Now hold that just one moment. To Shannon Hill, star of Shannon Hill News on Insta. Shannon, thank you for being with us. There have been a lot of conspiracy theories about the husband really did it. But first, tell me what I'm seeing in this still. Can I see the still from our friends at TMZ again, please?
Nancy, that photo right there is of Patrick Clancy and Dr. Rachel Danis. Not to be confused with Lindsay Clancy, because a lot of people online are saying that those two ladies look a lot alike.
So where are they? Shannon Hill, they look to be out on a patio somewhere canoodling.
They look to be out in New York, where I believe that they were seen just today. Maybe out on a date. They are wearing sneakers and are dressed pretty casually. Perhaps they went for a workout beforehand. They're both known to be runners.
Okay, so in New York, one has on sneakers or running shoes. Patrick Clancy, nothing. Dave Mack joining us. I'm getting to a male voice allegedly ordering Lindsay Clancy to kill her children. Dave Mack, I was accosted in Walmart yesterday, attacked verbally because I'm not reporting the truth about Lindsay Clancy. Dave Mack, what can you tell me, before we get to those theories, what can you tell me about this photo we're seeing? And it was reported as getting up close and personal, canoodling. What are we seeing, Dave Mack, in this still photo?
You are seeing Patrick Clancy having moved on with his life after one of the most devastating things any person can imagine. You know, he has moved on and married. He's married a woman who is a fertility specialist, and you see them together as a couple. And to be honest, they're in the first few years of their marriage. So, yeah, they're going to be a little affectionate outwardly. And this is just a man recovering.
Dave Mack, I think the uproar is that the canoodling is happening as this testimony regarding the murders, alleged murders of his three children is unfolding in a court of law. To Dr. Geraldine Utter joining us, clinical psychologist specializing in psychological evaluations and risk assessments for individuals in the criminal justice system, author of Mainlining Philly, Survival, Hope, Resisting Drug Addiction. Also, Aftershock, How Past Events Shake Up Your Life Today. She produces Utter Nonsense, a documentary. Dr. Gerilyn, thank you for being with us. Shannon Hill and Dave Mack have pointed out something very interesting. This is anecdotal, but I've noticed the similarity in his new wife physically and Lindsey Clancy. And we've seen that happen over and over and over. Men seem to marry women that look like the last wife or the last girlfriend. As a matter of fact, Dr. Gerilyn Utter, I actually use that in court. I had a serial killer, was going to get him on one charge, very wily, and the victim was strangled dead. Somehow I found, I remember how it was in a police report where he had strangled a previous girlfriend, the mother of one of his children. When I found her finally, she answered the door and I was like, she looked just like the dead victim. It was uncanny. And I remember when I saw the girlfriend, I had a sketch artist draw the victim, the dead victim, as she would have appeared in life and showed it to the jury. I rolled back one and then rolled back the other. It was like the courtroom was quiet. As you can imagine, you could have heard a pin drop. So what is that phenomena? I'm asking, let me be more specific. Let me rephrase and refine my question. Why do men always pick out lookalikes?
I mean, I got your question the first time. He has a type. We all have a type. Whether you're doing bad things or hurting that person at the end, he has a type. And his type looks to me to be women that have darker hair and darker eyes and that are slim build and they're athletic. To my knowledge, I believe both Lindsey and his new wife are runners. So he has a type. I mean, it's just indicative of what he prefers and what he's attracted to and what he likes.
You know, another issue to Shannon Hill joining us. She is the host of Shannon Hill News. Shannon, they also have other similarities, such as aren't they both involved in pediatrics?
Yes, they are both in the medical field. I believe that Dr. Rachel Danis is an OBGYN doctor, and Lindsey Clancy was a labor and deliveries nurse. So they are both from a sort of similar field. But on top of that, like your other guest was saying, they are both runners, very athletic, and they do strike a very similar resemblance to one another.
Interesting. Of course, that's not probative. That's nothing I can take to a jury in this case. It doesn't really prove anything. It's just an interesting point in this case. You know, the claim that Patrick Clancy is canoodling with his new wife, and that's certainly not a felony. But then there's a video painting an entirely different picture. Let's see the video of Patrick Clancy and the new wife. Look at this. She's on the phone. He was observed pacing back and forth shortly after the photo was taken. And he's sending texts. And it actually, to me, looks very tense. Not canoodling or making out at all. So to you, Dave Mack, Crime Stories Investigative Reporter. Guys, this is from Harvey Levin over at TMZ. Let's stay on it because Dave Mack is about to describe other things that have been observed. For instance, how in the hay did they even get this picture? They're clearly on a high, they're on a high rise, completely enclosed patio. How in the world? Dave Mack, how did this happen?
Because everybody has a phone in their hand, or has a camera in their phone in their hands. But Nancy, the part about this that is really getting people's goats isn't that they think Patrick Clancy did anything with regard to Lindsey or his children, but it's the timing of it all. I mean, we have been following this trial, and millions of people have, and we're hearing the most horrific things being described in court and being said out loud. And this just really shows a tone deaf thing towards the whole thing. These are his children that are being talked about. And here he is sitting, you know, out in public, with his new wife, who looks like his old wife, who's on trial. And that's the problem that people see with this. Now, I find it fascinating that we have shots of them canoodling, but the shot you're talking about where they're both on their phones, it's like a 30-minute long window, Nancy, where they're constantly on their phones. And to be honest with you, if you didn't know, you'd think they were in some type of an argument or disagreement. And I think it's people are saying, hey, you got a bad look going on here. Y'all need to just go, stay quiet, stay out of the public view for a little while, at least
Dave
during
Mac,
the trial.
I really hate to cut you off. I really do. Do you have even a scintilla? That means shred. Of evidence to support what you're saying about what they could possibly be talking about on the phone?
Not one bit, except...
No, okay. Thank you. Okay, just I'm going to limit you to yes-nos for the next few moments. So you have extrapolated that they're arguing with each other and he's texting and she's on the phone. So you also stated that they're out in public. They're not in public. They're obviously in a private patio setting. Let me see the still again, please. I mean, for Pete's sake, Patrick Clancy has his shoes off. He is not in public. That no. They're wearing the same clothes they're wearing in the video. He has his shoes off. They are not in public. So I don't know what you think the felony is that they are there together in, quote, public, which they're not. But the other thing that is concerning, and the reason I say this, out to Marie Pereira joining us, criminal defense attorney. She's also a domestic violence expert, and she's a registered nurse to boot. Marie, go with me for just one moment. Them hugging, sitting together, I don't care. I think the public is reacting because very upsetting testimony is unfolding in court. All I care about, as you know, because we've discussed it off air, is what does it prove? That's how I look at the world. The video and the still prove nothing about what happened to those three children. Let's see the shots of him in the pharmacy, please, control room, because, you know, as a matter of fact, I had to go to the doctor early this morning. One of the physician's assistants came up to me and just said, Lindsay Clancy. I'm like, let me just stop you right there. The husband didn't do it. Okay. Because pings, video, the pings on his phone, the video here and other places, his GPS in his car, the pickup time of the dinner his wife wanted, it all places him outside the home at the time the children were murdered. And I'm going to circle back to Dr. Kendall Crowns to determine how long can we tell the children had been murdered. It's scientifically proven what time he was away from the home. And the medical examiner can state what time the children were killed. He pulls up, he sees his wife, and he immediately calls 911, seeing her before he sees the children.
I think this is the most ridiculous conspiracy theory, and I don't think that it's going to seep into the minds of the jurors, because who does that? Who believes something like that when all of the evidence, like you said, Nancy, shows that he was away from the scene of this heinous tragedy?
Tracy Brown is joining us out of Boulder, body language expert, behavior analyst, trained alongside law enforcement and special forces. She's author of multiple books, most notably How to Detect Lies, Fraud, and Identity Theft. And you can find her at bodylanguagetrainer.com. Tracy, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tracy, tonight I'd like you to look at certain moments in court, captured in court. Because we're talking about what is seeping into the minds of the jurors. Well, they're certainly trained on Lindsay Clancy. Let's take a look. Okay, here we go, Tracy. Here is surveillance video of Clancy at a museum with her children 2 weeks before the murder.
We see a lot from Patrick here that's really interesting. And I think he is, I think he's really disengaged. I think he's really bored. You see him kicking his legs around. And right here, you see him put his hands over the top of his head right there. That's actually called the prisoner move. So he wants out of there. And he knows he is duck. So this isn't the most engaged moment as a dad that that you can have. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't look very exciting anyway. Like, I think a lot of us would be disengaged here, but he's been showing these signs. There he is checking his phone. Like, he is not in.
Okay, now, see, I see it completely differently. I've seen so many absentee dads, deadbeat dads, killer dads. List goes on. Let me see that video again. Okay, here he is. He's there. Okay, there he does. He looks detached. She's got all the children. He's just standing there like an impartial observer. Okay, now he's got one of the children with him. He tousles his hair. That's a loving sign to me. And, okay, there he is looking at his phone. But, I mean, everyone is guilty of that. I think that's a nonverbal sign right there with his hands locked behind his head. But I don't know what it means. He can't really engage with Callum because Callum is attached to the mom. So I just see it as a dad who maybe would like to be somewhere else. I don't know how long he has been there, but he's still sticking with the family. He's not out front smoking a cigarette across the street. You see what I mean, Tracy?
That was true. He showed up in body, but he wants out of there as quick as he can. And that's that head, the head, hands over the head. That's a prisoner. That means you're feeling trapped.
That actually makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking back to moments I have used that same gesticulation. That makes sense. Okay, let's see our next video of Lindsay Clancy reacting to her husband. What do you see here, Tracy?
Well, this is the first time she's seen him in court, presumably in a long time. And she is under deep stress. Now, she's really hard to read because she's paralyzed from the waist down. And that restricts, I mean, it eliminates a lot of movements that we would normally see. Now, here's what's interesting to me is that she licks her lips four times before he even says a word. It could be lip grooming, so she's trying to look better. It could be that she's really stressed, or it could be that she's really angry. Okay, so you have all of those, and it could be a combo of all of those right there. Now, she does something else with her eyebrows. Now, the forehead is the billboard. The eyebrows are the writing. And so we want to look for small, small little movements in that writing to understand what emotions are really going on. And we start to see the medial, that's above your nose, the middle part of her eyebrows go up. Okay, so that says there's sadness there. But then they start to rise just a little bit. And so there can be some fear and anxiety going on there too. So she has a lot of emotions going on all at once, even though she's really still. And like I said, she's one of the hardest people to read that I've ever had to do just because of the paralyzation.
Let's see the video again. You know, to you, Dr. Geraldine Utter, Utter is a clinical psychologist. Oh, by the way, this is from our friend, Nate Eaton, over at East Idaho News in the courtroom every single day. To me, she looks upset. She looks hurt. Maybe she's thinking about what they had that she completely destroyed with the three murders. Maybe she still loves him. He testified for the state, as I recall. Maybe she sees it as some sort of a betrayal. She just looks very hurt and anxious, like she doesn't know what's about to happen. To Geraldine Utter, Dr. Geraldine Utter, you know, when you see your ex possibly for the first time in a long time, there are floods of emotion, much less when you've killed his three children.
I mean, I agree with you, Nancy. She definitely looks like she is emotional, but when it comes to reading the small gesticulations in her face, I think one thing that we want to remember is that she is on a variety of different psychiatric medications that can cause something called tardive dyskinesia. And that is exactly kind of what she could be demonstrating, which is the lip movements. You have like involuntary lip movements, brow movements. So to Tracy's point, she's saying she's hard to read. And, you know, we want to measure that as a confounding factor, that the facial movements, you know, the lips moving, that could be a side effect or an adverse event of medication. But she does look very sad and upset. The thing that I noticed as well is she seems to be looking straight ahead. I don't know if she's looking exactly at him, but she can also be depersonalizing and, you know, kind of dissociating, checking out in that moment, maybe not staring directly at him, but around him to try to manage some of her emotions, even though she's clearly emoting a little bit on the screen there, as we can see.
Based on her reaction to him in court, I would like to point out to Dr. Geralyn Utter, when that happened, the online response was overwhelming that somehow he was involved. Again, she admits she killed her children. She has pled not guilty, NGBRI, not guilty by reason of insanity, which means I did it, but I was insane. So let's be clear. She has pled not guilty by reason of insanity. She admits she did it. Nobody's claiming Patrick Clancy did this. But something about this video, something about her reaction in court, has engendered a lot of sympathy, a lot of empathy, and a lot of blaming Patrick Clancy. Why? You know what? Let me go to Shannon Hill on that, star of Shannon Hill News. What is this just groundswell of hatred toward the husband and empathy toward her?
I think it really started off with the surveillance footage found in CVS that night, as well as the 3V restaurant. The online sleuths are claiming that Patrick Clancy changed his clothes between the time he went to CVS and the time he went to 3V restaurant. And this is where all of the rumors began. But if you look very closely at the footage from 3V and CVS, the 3V footage is a little clearer and more concise, whereas the CVS footage is a little more grainier. So you're seeing something that might look a little different in the next surveillance footage because they're completely different qualities. Different lighting, different side profile.
Shannon Hill, star of Shannon Hill News, I want to explore what you just said. Because if the jury has both of these videos back in the jury deliberation room, they could very well come up with the same argument you're talking about. I have sent exhibits back to juries before, and they come up with the craziest notions about what the... Here's a great example. When I would do fingerprint comparisons, I would always make individual postcards. Postcards. The laminated, you know, shiny type, like a shiny postcard you would get. About that big. And I would have the known print, in other words, your fingerprint, Shannon Hill, enlarged, black and white. And then I would have the latent, L-A-T-E-N-T, print on the other side. The print that was taken from the scene or wherever, off the body, from the scene. Right beside each other. And I would have the points of comparison circled in red. Not so small of a circle that it obscured the actual comparison for you to look at it. But here are the 12 similarities. I had one jury go back there and convince one juror that the two prints were not different. Because that juror saw some line differently than everybody else did and was convinced there was a frame-up. So you never know what jurors are going to do with exhibits that you send back to them, all right? So I'm glad, again, Shannon, you brought that up. Let's look at the video of Patrick Clancy coming into the restaurant, 3V. And you're right, Shannon. You're looking through glass. Now you see him. It looks like he's wearing a zip-up pea coat, jeans, brown shoes. Let's see if I can determine anything else. Not yet. Oh, coming in. Okay. It looks like, well, no, that's a zipper from his peacoat. Okay. Let's look. Oh, yep. There I see the shirt. Thank you for doing that, control room. I saw a little bit of the top of the shirt. Let's see that one more time. Here he comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. And there. There's the shirt. Okay. I've even had people claiming he's flirting with the lady who brings the bag. I mean, people stop. Let's see the pharmacy video. Okay. Yep, same thing. He's wearing the same thing. His coat is zipped up. To Dave Mack, if you know, what are the timestamps on the CVS and the restaurant video? How far apart are they from? Same brown shoes, 1.5 miles. That is helpful. Thank you. Hold on, Dave. I've got it. He leaves the Clancy home 5:15, CVS 5:32, 3V restaurant 5:45. So that's 13 minutes later. So what? Somebody wants to argue between 5:32 and 5:45. He left CVS, went home, murdered three children, left, and came back to 3V at 5:45. And then he's home at 6:09. No, that did not happen. So, okay, Shannon Hill, do you think we put the change of clothes issue to sleep? Or is it going to have a nightmare and start walking amongst us? What?
I think that the change of clothes never happened. I think, like we said earlier, I think it's different angles, different quality of surveillance footage. I think it on one angle, it looks like he's wearing sneakers at the 3B restaurant. But then from another angle at CVS, it almost looks like boots. But again, the quality is a little grayer. In that footage from 3V restaurant, it looks like he's wearing a full zip coat. But in that second footage from CVS, it looks like it's only a partial zip. But again, this is quality versus actual what we're seeing in real life. And
I think the partial zip, could that possibly be his shirt underneath? Okay, they're the same clothes as far as I can see. Uh-oh, I'm hearing Marie Pereira wants in. Okay, Marie, jump in.
I'm really upset that we're paying so much attention to this video, because all I can think is while he was picking up this food and going to CVS, his psychotic wife, who had a break with reality, was killing those kids. That's all I see from the video. So that's all I see. That woman was experiencing acute psychosis. It was an emergency. That's what acute is. It happened suddenly. She had a break with reality, and she did heard a voice, a male voice, whatever voice telling her, kill yourself and kill the kids. She had no control of it, so therefore there was no intent. No intent because she couldn't control reality. She had a break from it. She told everybody, Nancy, what she's feeling. I wouldn't have enough time to go through all of the witnesses who said, yes, she said this. I want to hurt the kids. She checked herself into every facility she could. Why are we even here? She's not guilty by reason of insanity. She could not be criminally responsible for this because of acute psychosis. She's like the poster child for it. My God.
Marie, I'm going to take a position on this, and here we go. This is the law, whether you or I like it or not, this is the law. The law is, one may immediately regret the deed, but that does not negate intent at the time of the incident. The law also is, intent can be formed in the twinkling of a moment, the blink of an eye, the time it takes you to pull a trigger, much less manually strangle three children with exercise bands. That is time to form intent.
Psychosis can occur.
Many argue that she got her husband out of the home intentionally so she could then kill the children, much as Andrea Yates did. This is what I see happening in this case. Whether the state proves intent or not, I think we're going to have jury nullification because of everything you just said. I think people are going to feel horribly sorry for Lindsay Clancy. They're going to put themselves in her shoes. They're going to see her paralyzed, and they're going to acquit her. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But your argument is overwhelmingly compelling. In fact, people have gotten so distressed about the Lindsay Clancy case, they are reenacting her from her window. Look at this.
TikTokers are posting reenactment videos of them hanging out the window to prove that Lindsay Clancy is innocent. This weekend, I've seen two different women hanging out of their own windows, The first woman was hanging out of her two-story window after putting blue dish soap on her wrist to show where the stain should have been if Lindsay opened it.
Bridget Ayers on X. I mean, you can see how vested people are in the outcome of this case. To Tracy Brown, take a look at Lindsay Clancy grabbing her lawyer's hands in court. Now, this is during the testimony where the children's pajamas were shown. She is looking away, clutching her lawyer's hands. What does that mean? What does that mean, Tracy?
Well, she is looking for support here. She grabbed his hand just a moment before this. His back was to her, and he was looking at the, is awful, like little pants and little robes and things that the kids owned. Now, she probably grabbed his hand. She cannot look at the evidence. Okay, so she's looking down. Her hair is in the way. That is purposeful. It may be unconscious, but it's purposefully keeping her from even being able to glance over there. And through this trial, he has been working to humanize her. And so I think it's interesting that that the camera went right over to her. And in this moment, all of a sudden, she's grabbed his hand. So she's also crying in this moment.
In this next video, we see Patrick Clancy in court. Take a look at Clancy in court. He was a state's witness, but according to many observers, he helped the defense. What are we seeing here in a nutshell, Tracy Brown?
We are seeing a guy who is not confident in his answers, and he's itching, he's scratching his baseline. What's important here is that his baseline is completely different than when he's answering other questions. And this is at the penultimate time of, hey, what did Lindsay say? Where are the kids? These things. Now, here's what's seeping into the juror's mind, is that these little movements add up to one thing, and that is lack of confidence, okay? As opposed to the first responders who testified, and we have that video as well, and they are not moving. They are very resolute in their answers. And so that's what's going on in the mind of the public. That's right. What's going on in the mind of the jurors.
Dave Mack, again, let me confirm. Didn't Lindsay Clancy say she heard a male voice telling her to kill?
Yes, that is exactly what she is now, or they have claimed in court, is that she heard a male voice tell her to kill her children and then herself.
Not the first time. Randy Santos, who rampaged Chinatown, killing four sleeping people. Irina Zirutska, the beautiful Ukrainian who sought a better life in our country, is murdered. The perp claiming he was told by a male voice to commit murder. In the Haskell family killings, Ronald Lee Haskell killed a whole family. He heard a male voice named Joseph. His voice even had a name. Cheryl Lynn Massip killed her six-week-old son after hearing a male voice. Kipland Philip Kinkle, at age 15, he perpetrated the Thurston High School shooting, Springfield, shot and killed his parents inside their home, claiming he heard a male voice telling him to kill. Even the son of Sam, David Berkowitz, claimed to hear male demons. He later recanted that. Why is it always a man, Dr. Geraldine Utter? Why is it always a male voice telling you to kill?
What's interesting is a lot of people may perceive male or the male gender as something that's more authoritative. So in Lindsay's case, if we speak specifically about Lindsay, the fact that she heard a male voice may directly correlate to
woman. Look at the stats. Authority, my rear end, evil. Look at crime statistics. How many women do you see doing school shootings, rampages through malls? Practically zero. A male voice is more threatening. When you're jogging at 9 o'clock at night and some little petite 5 foot, 100 pound lady comes up behind you, do you run and hide? No. When you see a giant guy lumbering up behind you, you might turn around and go the other way. Why? Threatening. It's more threatening. It's scary.
I mean, that could absolutely be the case. But the other thing, too, that I just wanted to mention, Nancy, is we're talking about command hallucinations. So that means that this voice male is telling her that she has to hurt her children, which is directly correlated to a psychotic episode, which should not be confused with just postpartum depression. So she had postpartum depression with a psychotic episode and a command hallucination telling her to hurt her children. And just one thing I just wanted to add, Nancy, we're talking about Patrick Clancy and we're talking about all these conspiracy theories. To kind of tie it all together from a psychological perspective, I think one thing that's important for the public to understand is there's been a lot of evidence and talk about him not being the best husband, being a negligent husband, not helping her when she's in mental health crisis, not helping her in a time of need. And I think there's confusion about somebody who maybe was not a great husband and was a terrible husband and didn't help his wife versus a murderer. And I think those lines are being blurred, and it feels much better psychologically to believe that, you know, he did this compared to Lindsay, who was, you know, a labor and delivery nurse. She's a beautiful young woman. She was a really good mom, and now she's in a wheelchair. So that whole package together helps to feed all of the conspiracy out there about Patrick.
For all joining us tonight, the suicide hotline, simply dial or even text the numbers 988. Repeat, 988. Tonight, we remember an American hero, Lieutenant Michael Wood, Newberry PD, South Carolina, killed in the line of duty after 20 years on the force, leaving behind a wife turned widow, Jennifer, and two sons, Brandon and Alexander. American hero, Lieutenant Michael Wood. Thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us tonight. Nancy Grace, signing off for tonight. But I'll see you tomorrow night. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.